Welcome to the Josh Ryan Show, a weekly podcast where I sit down and chat with highly successful digital entrepreneurs, experts, and creators to uncover their stories, secrets, and lessons that they've learned along the way to help you with your own projects. Let's get into today's interview. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Today, I am joined by Kale. He is the founder of a marketing agency, K&J Growth, working with some pretty huge clients, TikTok, Monster, and a lot of other companies, Microsoft. Worked. You're also a partner with Rugby Bricks, an e-commerce store, and a member of the Forbes Council. And most importantly, fellow New Zealander, first one on the show, actually. So welcome, man. How you doing?
Yeah, thank you, bro. I'm glad to be here. Always stoked to obviously do this, and it's always a privilege to be on a podcast, but even better when it's more Kiwi-centric.
Yeah, man. Good to have you. For those who don't know you, can you introduce yourself a bit more about what you do and who you are?
Yeah, so kia ora, everyone. My name is Kale Panahall. I live down in Dunedin, so a South Islander in New Zealand. I run a digital marketing agency called K&J Growth. We have an office here in Dunedin, and then we've got another one of all places in LA. So I have a co-founder, Jonathan Maxim. We started that roughly around about 5 years ago now. And so we focus on what's called performance marketing. So companies come to us and they say, hey, we're paying $1,000 for a lead. Ideally, we'd like to reduce that cost, and we'll say, great, let's get it down to 800. And then we help take the profit in between. So typically that's how we work, and that's allowed us to grow at a pretty fast rate. So when our clients are winning, we hang out on our performance, and that's typically how we work. I am a managing director and partner at Rugby Bricks. That's an e-commerce company. So what we're doing there and what that looks like is we sell anything around rugby apparel, kicking tees. And so that's with another guy, Peter Breen. And then the third and final thing is I've got a blog called Hakune, which is the Maori word for method. And so just writing about audience building, what we're doing, some of the things that are working inside of both of those companies and what I've done to date.
Awesome. That's an interesting approach to the marketing agency side of things, where it's so you're more getting paid on performance as opposed to just $1,000 a month for managing a social media feed.
Yeah, that's it. That's the reason we chose that model, and we started very similar to that on a retainer model. Hey, we'll do your growth. And
apologies to interrupt your listening experience, but I just wanted to jump in and say, if you're enjoying this podcast so far, I would really appreciate it if you went ahead and left a review on whatever platform you listen on. By simply spending 5 or 10 seconds to leave a review, it helps us reach more people and grow the podcast, which allows us to get better guests on and give you better content. So if you're enjoying it, let me know with a review. Much appreciated. Thank you for your support and enjoy the rest of the interview.
Look after you and run your social media channels and do some of the stuff around your media buying and ads. What we found is that, you know, we've got a pretty strong vertically aligned agency. So we have just one person who runs Facebook ads, one person who runs Google PPC ads, and then one who does Twitter, LinkedIn, and that sort of thing. And so with it there, we find our media buying performance to be better than most. And so we're able to look at it and say, okay, cool. Well, look, what we want to be able to do is that there's a bigger potential upside if we can increase the profits of our clients. And we'd love to see and share that. And then it also makes it easier to close clients too. When you're saying, hey, look, it's going to cost you 1 month for us to set this up. And then going forward from there, we're going to have a pro forma to describe what it costs, figure out how we share the profits. And for us, it's been a really good model for us to leverage and grow. And we worked with that around TikTok. They were looking at roughly saying, hey, if you can get installs for us at, we'll pay you $10 USD per sign up. And we said, great, cool. And so when you can figure out a margin less of, obviously it's might be costing us like some of the installs we were getting around about like $2 to $3. Then you got $7 of profit per install, and we ended up generating, you know, for them hundreds of thousands of users. So it's a pretty great model for scaling up, but also requires a lot more for you to hang your performance on, but also really high risk.
Yeah, it seems to be almost a bit of a common model for people to start out just doing like the basics of just, you know, posting on Instagram, posting on Facebook. But if you can make that switch to like actually getting results, whether it's like you say, getting installs or customers or revenue or whatever, like there's a lot more to be made if you can help a company get awesome results.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I mean, for most people who are looking at this, and what traditional agencies have typically done is it's a retainer. You have another marketing hire that's probably more educated than the people you have internally. And so when you look at it on that freight in that way, you're almost treated like an employee compared to when you're framed of as someone who can come in and literally say, hey, we're going to help you grow your company and increase your profits. Your value and stickiness for clients goes up. And then the other side too is that if you figure out growth tactics for them, which could be, you know, we'll come in and look at CRM optimizations, revenue optimizations, how their salespeople sell, how they actually talk about the sales, what they're doing, those types of things, changing scripts, and then also the media buying on top, you become an incredibly like more valuable asset. And so you then actually just have a longer retention of clients, and it just becomes an easier pitch and an easier way to close. But on the flip side is it requires a lot more specialized skill.
Yep. And actually being able to deliver those results that you're promising.
100%.
What got you into entrepreneurship and marketing, I guess, like from the start? Have you always been into that or?
I had a flatmate, George Gray, when I was at university, studying biochem. And he was studying entrepreneurship at the same time. Introduced me to the book, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and had no real concept or idea of what does that actually mean and what does that look like. For me, I'd never really even thought about it as a career pathway. Parents had never done anything like that. And so seeing someone and actually hearing that you can pick and choose your own time was a really, really big eye-opener. And George, I was in this podcast after too, and he's another Kiwi. He went overseas and just started living Mexico, US, wherever he liked, and he was traveling all the time. And it became super appealing. And so for me, I ended up working in a SaaS startup, EdTech One, called Education Perfect. It's down here in Dunedin as well. Worked for them for a couple of years doing sales, and then went into another role and got fired pretty quickly. Not fired, but didn't. But, you know, you do a 90-day trial here in New Zealand, and essentially, if you're not good, you just don't get a callback. That was me.
Yeah.
So very analogous to getting fired.
Yeah.
And then went away from there and looked at, okay, cool. What are my skill sets? I'm a personal trainer. I've got a science background. And then what can I do around digital marketing? Opened a gym in Cromwell, and it's ever been since then. I've never looked back. We made a couple hundred grand of revenue in 14 days of pre-sales. And from there, it was enough to get me started to pick up contracts, write for a few publications, and then it led me down to getting better and better at digital marketing.
What got you those skills to launch that gym so successfully? Do you think a lot of that came from the SaaS business that you worked at? Because I can't imagine too much of the university side of things would have helped you with the marketing, maybe with the actual personal training, but...
Yeah, little to none. So
yeah.
Yeah, varsity gave me nothing. I didn't really, in the way that the skills, like obviously how to study, science is a good piece to pick up for when you're learning how to think and run about testing. And I'm lucky to sort of have that background of at least, you know, if you've gone through and you've learned chemistry, biochem, and then some of those other key pieces around that, you actually get to pick up, you know, statistics and some of the other things that come with that. And if you think about good marketing and some of the stuff that you do, you want to run some of it, which is the art piece around branding, how people perceive, what people think, and the creative and the copy. And then running media campaigns, well, that's, you can make that as much of a science as you want to in terms of customer acquisition cost, you know, conversion rates, all of those types of things, building funnels and then starting to see and build experiments around it. So I think on that way, like I was very lucky to have at least a background in that part of it.
Yeah.
But coming through a lot of it again was Tim Ferriss, Ryan Holiday stuff. I picked up, I think it's Growth Hacker Marketing by Ryan Holiday. I can't remember if that's exactly what the title of the book is. But that was a really good book and resource. And then Tim Ferriss's, like, for anyone who hasn't or seen some of his stuff, like when he was starting out, 2008 was when he dropped The 4-Hour Workweek, I think, or 2007. But the piece that he shared when he was doing some of that stuff is he was doing a lot of case studies. And one of the ones that I picked up was, I think it was maybe the launch of Harry's, the shaving brand. And he wrote a full case study, or actually, no, it was a Kickstarter one, how he made 100K in 10 days. Literally yep. took the exact case study, peeled it piece by piece, and then literally applied it to a local rural community gym. And then it turned out to be far better than what I could have ever expected. And I wrote a full article on how we did it, how we made the budgets and everything from there. And that got me some pretty big coverage, ended up in Inc, Forbes and that sort of stuff, because people then ended up using it and still being used to this day, that case study, which is cool.
Yeah, that book has got a lot of publicity on this podcast. I feel like half of the people so far have pretty much accredited a lot of their success to that book.
100%.
Yeah, it is an incredible read. Ryan Holiday too. I haven't read all of his books. I don't think I've read that Growth Hacker one, but a lot of his stuff is unbelievable as well.
Yeah, just two iconic, like both started, I guess, maybe not so much in marketing, but in entrepreneurship, and both had like a pretty strong background in it when you look at their stuff. But another great one that he's produced, Ryan Holiday, is called Perennial Seller. And it's not a lot of people talk about his stoicism stuff, but his books around marketing are just as good, if not better.
Yeah, really good. Do you still have that gym today, or did you sell that and move on?
My cousin, he's there now. They've got, there's four of them. So there's one in Cromwell, which is, as we were mentioning before we were chatting for the podcast, where your dad grew up. So there's that one there. There's one in Kaikoura, one in Nelson, and then one in Temuka. So that same model that we've used has just now been pulled across each of those towns, and they've just they're opening the gyms up, and there's multiple partners throughout all of them, based on who lives in what town, who does that, and what does the profit shares look like. And so it's been a model for opening businesses and gyms like that all around the country. And basically when we find a spot that makes competitive sense, they'll go out and open another gym.
Yeah. What's the one in Nelson called then?
Central Fitness. Oh, not Nelson, sorry. It's in Picton. I say that. I tell a lie.
Ah, okay.
Which is, yeah, why? Yeah, because you should go, bro.
Yeah, I was going
to
say. Well,
probably not all the way to Picton.
Yeah, that's a decent commute.
for a lift.
Yeah. And now, then you went on and used those marketing skills to start your agency. You discussed earlier working with the likes of TikTok and so on. Like, these are some pretty massive clients. Like, how do you actually go about signing and working with these clients? Like, I think like with a small business, it's a bit easier. You're just going to send them a cold email, you know, pitch your offer, meet them somewhere. But I imagine it's quite a different process with a massive company like that. You can't just flip them an email and say, hey, I'll get you some new customers.
Yeah, 100%. So pitching becomes a slightly different thing as you get bigger and bigger. But yeah, very much I started similar ways to many of other people who are probably listening at agencies or are just looking for any form of work. Initially, it's cold email. How do you market yourself? How do you get people to pay attention? One of the things that came out of it was in 2018, I made, like that year on LinkedIn, one of the most commented videos. Ended up getting like 2 million views and an investor saw it. Got picked up by them. And then they did some outreach to us. And then when they Googled Growth Hackers Los Angeles, our company and our thing came up for that search as well. And I think we were top of the SEO results at that time. And then they made an inquiry. So it was like a shoulder tap from someone who'd seen the LinkedIn video, then be like, oh, this guy knows what they're doing. And then Google searched and came through for us. So TikTok's, that's serendipitous. I think, you know, one of the things I look at that is like all the things when we talk about marketing, digital marketing, growth hacking, is that all of us want to try and do it on clients and get paid. The first piece, and I think what you've done really well, is probably just testing yourself and building your own stuff first, right? How do you do it with your own brand and your own personal persona so that when you go out and you're initially doing it, well, you know all the growth mechanics behind it and you've got your own test subject. And so that speaks a testimonial to the type of work you can do. But
yeah,
as you get bigger and you go through some of these things, the type of client that you want also changes, right? So basically when I started, like I was signing people, shit, probably like $4,000 to $5,000. And those were mind blowing figures for me at the time. So like when you first started and you're just trying to close anything, that was like a really, really big piece. To now, you know, we don't have contracts that are, they're probably mid five figures. And those are the starting points up to, you know, very similar to what we were talking about before that. Now we're doing seven figures type of stuff. And the prospecting becomes very, very different. But I'll flick you the deck after this too of how we used to close TikTok, what that looked like.
Yeah,
I think I've got it publicly somewhere. But it was very much the conversation we came in was, hey, here's what some of the growth mechanics are. We're this company out of China called ByteDance. We have this thing called TikTok. And that was in 2019. And they had basically a pretty good user base at that time from what they'd acquired, which was Musical.ly. And then it was only in kids though. And they were like, we need people your age to start using it. And so we had, you know, a year and a bit working with them where we essentially just got paid per install. And as a model, if you can find cheap installs, you can do that really, really well. So going into those conversations, though, they're different types of things because you need one bit of sales skills, like how do I actually address this conversation to show that we're good at what we do? But two, just understanding the premise for most of these people is like, what's their North Star metric? A lot of the stuff when you start pitching and when you go through it is you talk about how great the features are or what you can build in a funnel. Ultimately, most of those people who are employed or have other managers are looking for something that is the KPI that's related to them. Oh, I'm hired for growth. If I hire an agency that does some of my job for me, what is that that's going to move the needle? And so you talk about the benefit to them and the way that you'll actually make them look impressive. And so most of the time now when I pitch, and this is for things like RFPs, digital boosters as an example, a lot of the stuff we're looking at is how do we actually make the people who are making decisions look better, or who's signing up on a lot of those budgets. And you just learn sales conversations. Sales is a skills that I've had to pick up, and it's certainly been a very different thing to actually digital marketing, creating viral content and that sort of stuff. It's how do you have the right conversation with the right people so that when it comes to learning how people make buying decisions, that you can actually inform them in the right way so that they can go talk to the people above them and then have that right conversation.
Yeah, just knowing how to frame it and position it and, I guess, sell the results to them.
That's it. And that's the thing. You just, when we look at this, and I go into a lot of meetings now when we're talking to companies that are doing seven-figure deals or some of that sort of stuff that we're discussing, the Microsofts of the world, those sort of things, is, well, what's something that's really important to them as a company? And then what are they talking about? And your sales scope and research becomes very different, right? What does the marketing manager of Microsoft New Zealand care about? Well, hey, we need to hit small business targets, or hey, we're looking, we need to be D&I and more inclusive and community driven. And so when you're pitching and you're learning how to do sales, you almost go to an account-based marketing strategy where you learn about these people and understand what their needs and drivers are for them to sign off on the work that you're going to do. And then that becomes cool. Well, also, we're a performance-based company, and so any upside that you get to see will help you split that and go through some of those things.
Yeah, and that must make it a really attractive offer when it is, like, you know, taking a split of the results, because any business is, well, not any business, but if you're getting them results and taking a fee of that, like, there's no real downside to them, is there?
Exactly, and that's it. So for them to take a risk in terms of, hey, we'll pay five figures for an upfront retainer, and doing that, well, that's an ongoing cost that they have, and they can't hang on anything on it. Yep, you may get really great results, and they could be good, but a retainer still, most people are locked into 3 to 6 month contracts, whereas we're like, great, you pay us five figures for the first month, we'll scope, see where we can make your improvements. You'll get a pretty detailed report, and then we'll go through and build out a pro forma, which is essentially, here's what the cost of us understanding is, here's how we figure out we'll split the sales and the revenue from here, and then here's how we'll go about doing it. And you become useful for as long as you can continue to produce results. So it's a really low risk model for the client, but potentially really massive upside for both parties, because if you can grow a company, and we've had companies that we've taken sort of from that were doing roughly, you know, about $500,000 up to sort of 10 million. Like, that's sort of our best growth case study, where we've been able to go, okay, sweet. Well, your revenue's increased, but all your profits have increased as well. And so taking a share in that when you've got people who have, and clients who have really good offers, makes it really, really scalable. Because a lot of people, when they start a business, they've either got a pretty crappy offer and they're trying to make it better, or they've got a really great offer, but they don't know how to pitch it. And if we find people like that and companies that have a really good product, so they've just got no idea how to pitch and run to the right audience, use the digital marketing tools that you and I use, and then implement content that converts, you end up with a real winner. And Rugby Bricks is a great example of that, where I identified pretty early on that Pete was on to a winner. And rugby's not a very competitive market in a way that people aren't very good at digital marketing. There was just an easy room for growth there. And so, you know, we started at 80K and we're now up to about a million. So it's sort of that space where we're getting to that growth of, that was over 3 years. You can see really great products that have a really good offer. And then when you add marketing or good scalability to it, you can win and get a lot of share on the upside.
Yeah. And so you sometimes will find business. So you didn't start Rugby Bricks, but you came on, you identified it as a good company and came on as a partner to help them build it.
Yeah. That's it. So Pete, I knew from going, sorry, pardon. Pete, I knew from Polytech.
Yeah.
So he and I went into personal training school together. I saw it was Instagram and it was taking off. Maybe there were like 30K, 40K followers. I wrote an article about it. I said, what are you doing? He said, oh, I've got like a basic Wix website. He was selling, he had a kicking tee and was selling programs, but like the traffic to the website he was getting, it might've been 1,500 visitors a week. So huge traffic at that stage for someone who had nothing and knew pretty much no digital marketing. So I looked at it and I was like, great, well, bro, I think I can come in. Let's look at splitting some equity. Don't bother about paying us anything. Just give me some of the upside in terms of owning the company. And he and I sort of negotiated a deal out from there. And we've just managed to scale it up and out since. And, you know, we're now at over, probably when he started, they were doing, you know, they had an audience of maybe 60,000. And now, I don't know, we're close to probably 400,000 people across all of our total social channels and that sort of stuff. And then revenue's gone from 80 to, you know, that seven-figure mark. So we're about to hire a CEO, which is great. But you just see people who've got really good offers and they're building a really great product and it's working really well. And then you can go in and add a lot of the growth stuff and tactics that you and I do, which is building the right funnel, building great landing pages, building good websites that convert, building really good audience engagement strategies, and then scaling that up and out.
Yeah, well, I guess once someone's got that really good base of can deliver the product, has a great product, like, and all you have to focus on is just getting more people to it, it means there's a lot more upside for you. You don't have to come in and fix everything.
Exactly. And it's like Pete was running this on like a Wix website, but the site was so shit. And he was, you know, he'd made 80 grand. And I was like, you're even doing this with literally like, it's hard to buy from you. Like,
yeah.
And he was being able to do that. And I thought like, and as a one man band, he was doing all the fulfillment product all by himself. Like, incredible founder success story. And he was still personal training on the side, working huge hours, but was making it work. And it's like, you're also investing in the other people in terms of who's making this offer and the product that they've got is great, but who's the driving human behind it. And he was just the right person. And when you can find clients like that, it makes it a huge boon for you as a business to take that on.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, your newest venture, Hakune, which you mentioned before, that seems to be more your outlet for now, educating people on all this stuff that you're learning. So you're building these businesses, running your agency, gathering all this info and stuff, and then seems like you're just putting it all out there, helping people there. How's that been going?
Well, it's a lot of the same things that you're probably doing now and that we're looking at is, hey, I want a distribution and an outlet for doing some of those things. So similar to you being able to say this, hey, I have a podcast. Well, it's easy to talk to high-level people then, right? They're like, oh, yeah, I can make time for that because I get an interview and then I get something shared. Whereas going to ask someone for a coffee is actually a pain in the ass for the person. There's not much upside or benefit for them. And so the first is like, hey, how do we increase our network? I'm talking to really smart people all the time. And, you know, I'm a big believer in you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And so Hakune is just a way for me to spend time and ask really good questions of people just smarter than me in whatever industry that I like. And the second is audience building. If I look at what every time, like I'm at that stage now, this is year five, and if I share blogs or links or that sort of things, there's like people who will go buy products on the back of my recommendations and that sort of thing. And so one of those things is to have an outlet that you can collect and send high trust offers to, or as I build more products that I may want to monetize in the future, building an audience is for there. And then the third piece is like, we want to make really informative content. The guy I've started this with, Reese Jeffrey, he's a really clever bloke, runs a gym here in Dunedin called World Fitness. And he's done an incredible job to turn that around. But one of the, just the smartest critical thinkers, one of the things that the opportunity was just for me to work and spend more time with him in the audience building space. But also for me, when I was starting out, like a lot of the people where you get to hear, oh, so Kale's come in, he's an agency owner, you know what I mean? They're doing $5-6 million and you get that highlight reel. But a lot of the time I was like, fuck, what did they actually do day to day that made them get to that piece? What were their habits? How do they wake up? What are the ads that they run? What are those growth tactics and strategies? I couldn't find a huge amount of that stuff when I was starting out. And so a lot of that for me was two parts. One, we want to build some good mental models and some long form stuff, interview some ones around great founders, but also tactically, here's how to run an ad campaign. We're now doing like a weekly thing where I'm like, here's what we spent last week at K&J. Here's some of the things that we've done at Rugby Bricks. And then this is what's worked. And just sharing a lot of that content, because for me as a founder, when I started out, that would have been really just super useful, because then it's in real time. You get to see how people are doing it. And I just think we've got a lot of that in New Zealand, some really amazing stuff over in the States. But for Kiwi founders, we don't have a huge amount of that.
Yeah, definitely agree. There's a ton of that in the US and a little bit of it in the UK you see as well, but New Zealand doesn't have much much content out there in the business world. And those who are doing it are usually hard to find. Like we mentioned before the call, like there's a few people here doing stuff, but it's like really hard to find who they are.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. So, you know, for us, it's just an ability, one, to just build that audience. And then two, hopefully, as we get the community going with that sort of stuff, is just share more of those resources. Because, you know, we're in the middle of nowhere, but one of the things we can digitally export is knowledge, products, e-commerce, all those sort of things. And so for me, the ability to sort of build a blog around that and have newsletters, that sort of stuff, is just something I wish we'd had better. But we just don't get to see some of those really high level people in New Zealand talking tactically about what it is. Same thing, I sort of just started asking you questions at the start, is I just want to learn what you're doing, because there's definitely things that you're probably doing that I'm not, and I could definitely pick up and implement those into my own business and that sort of thing. So I think at least if we start to build more of that and podcasts like this for Kiwis, it's going to be a hell of a useful asset.
Heck yeah, and it's going to benefit everyone, because then other businesses can learn, and that can make their businesses more successful and hire more people, and everyone benefits from it. I will link that below as well for people that are wanting to go and check that out. I saw you had I haven't read it yet, but you had an article the other day about spending some crazy amount in the first quarter.
That you posted
on Instagram.
Oh yeah, well, it was in a week, but you know, it's basically putting what our weekly spend is for K&J, and then how many content pieces we're doing, and then what that sort of looks like for doing it. And I'll publish the other one today, but basically it's what's working with ads, what's working with our organic content, and then what's not working as well, which is just as important. There's a couple of times where we've certainly run projects or products, and some of them are just complete fuck ups. So staying on the other side of that is the other piece, is the blog. We want it to be pretty useful. Of here's also what not to do. And certainly that is affected by a lot of the luck, timing, and that sort of stuff. But tactically, some of these things, like we launched a product for Rugby Bricks, SaaS product, and we just wanted to test the MVP of it, so the minimum viable product, on Facebook groups, and it was just a fucking disaster. People couldn't sign up. It was really hard to get through there. The user funnel for people to even go from like an Instagram story to it was just terrible. So wrote about that as well. It's like, hey, this was a shitty monetization model. Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, they can save people almost as much time, if not more, than what does work sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. So just trying to do those sort of things too.
Yeah. I think it's really good that you've actually, because there's a lot of people that are creating content that aren't doing it, like that are just sort of saying this and saying that, but I think it's really good the way that you're documenting what you're actually doing. So you're running a business and then you're just publishing the insights that you're learning, as opposed to ideas that may or may not work that you see a lot of online as well.
Yeah, I think that's it. Like, results bases are pretty good, because then at least you can hang, like I said, in the same way that we talk to our clients, you can hang your head on it, and then it becomes a pretty useful piece. But I think, and this is the thing that we talk about in New Zealand and most of us too, is we're really good, I guess, maybe not even good at this. We're not even good at sharing our highlight reels, but we're not very good at, we're not even good at talking about what happens behind closed doors. We're fucking useless. Yeah. Can't talk about money, can't really talk about failures, and don't look like too much of a dick in front of our mates. So a lot of that stuff is just demystifying a lot of the stuff. Like, when people want to hear me listen or get to talk and that sort of stuff, they'll be like, wow, that guy's done this X, Y, and Z, or how does he get to that piece? But ultimately, like, that's still the highlight reel. There's still a large proportion of luck, there's a large proportion of timing, and then the skills and tactics of how hard I work, some of those things, mental models, heuristics, those types of stuff, and then the actual, this is what I do day to day. We want to be able to share that so that people actually get an inside look, because as much as it is, as much as I've succeeded, I've probably fucked up just as much, probably not more.
Yeah, I agree. Same here. Like, I feel like most successful people are like that. They've made all these mistakes and then they learn enough of what not to do that eventually something's got to work.
Exactly. That's it. I've just taken enough shots at goal that I've missed more than enough times that I've seen where I've missed. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I need to shoot in that particular angle in place and then recalibrate every time I'm doing it. So certainly helped on that front.
A great example, especially for the rugby tees. The shots and goal.
Exactly. I tell you, I've missed a lot of kicks off a tee, so.
Same here. I wanted to be a halfback or first five back in the day when I was small, but didn't grow and was tiny, so rugby didn't quite work out.
It's look, I played rugby and I still couldn't do it, so. Don't worry, the size didn't help too much.
One thing I've found I've noticed that you're working with all of these projects with a lot of fellow Kiwis, and even in the South Island as well. But with your K&J growth agency, you've got your partner with someone in LA, correct?
Yep.
How do you find that, like being business partners with someone on the opposite side of the world and in a totally different time zone, although it's almost so far behind that it's the same time zone? But how do you find that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the things that we have a tendency to do a little better than, or have a difference is, and the biggest asset to me is, like I've said, the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And so one of the things that we look at, and we go through some of this stuff, and I'm looking at on my end, is John and the way our US-based team are, is people talk about money differently there. People talk about how to build a business differently, and everyone's very, very much open about it. There's a whole range of stuff where we get to see a lot of real-life case studies of companies and founders working their asses off. And for that, on my end, it's been a really different piece, because we don't like talking about cash, but wealth is a really, or building money and then saving and creating wealth and learning how much money you've made, is something we're just shitty at talking about here. And so when people are openly talking about how to make more money, you then get to learn a little bit about, well, why did you make that much money? How did you do it? What does it look like? Because people use it as a boasting and virtue signaling thing over there. So that's the first piece, is that as Kiwis, we're just really poor at doing that. And for me, the ability to actually go through and have someone that I can talk about pretty openly with it. The second is, we're just behind in New Zealand. For us, when we look at what we're doing digitally marketing wise, and most of our stats, traits and the things and the campaigns we're working on are informed usually later by what other people are testing and running over there. We spend a lot of time on Web3 at the moment. I'm working on a project with the estate of Stan Lee, so the guy who created Marvel and Roc Nation. Yep. And it's Web3 marketing, so we're taking a NFT to market, which is great. And really high visibility, really huge project in terms of projections of launch, what that means. And then there's a publicly traded company that's backing it as well. And access to opportunities like that are really slim in New Zealand. So I'm learning how to do more Web3 marketing, but also, you know, with exposure to those types of things, it definitely has allowed me to think differently, be differently, and I think some of the parts that I look at of this is just read and be exposed to a different set of ideas than what we would have here. It's pretty easy to talk about the 9 to 5 here, go have a beer after work, and talk about just your mundane sort of things that you would hope to change, but never probably will. And so Kiwis, that's a bad painting stereotype, but for most of it and a few of my mates, it's just the same. It's rinse and repeat, whereas there's a complete novelty of ideas when you're exposed to stuff in the US. So the time zone stuff's a bit of a pain in the ass when it doesn't work, but certainly makes up for it in terms of opportunities and access to them.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's similar stuff here. All my clients and work has pretty much always been in the US for that same reason. Like, there's a lot more happening, a lot more forward thinking and openness and new ideas you can just take and run with. Did you find it harder? Because I mean, you mentioned, like, you're the average of the five people you're around. That's a big thing you believe in. And then being in New Zealand, we say a lot of people are not in that, like, forward thinking side of things. Like, how did you deal with that? Trying to get around similar, like-minded people doing big things. How did you overcome that?
Yeah. So, I mean, if I look at it, I just have a shitload of books sitting around me all the time. There's just Brain Rules. Yep. There's another one, Ryan Holiday book here, Ego's the Enemy. So as you build your identity, those five people don't have to be physical, real people. They can be books in terms of the way that an author speaks. And it can also be digitally who you look and follow, right? On my Instagram, I'm following about 250 people. And the reason I keep and do that is because they're people that I find interesting. And their thoughts and processes are things that I want to see. And so being in Dunedin has two really good benefits. First is that mostly in entrepreneurship, you can get into a space of a dick measuring contest, which is, hey, my business does X revenue, I'm this profitable, and I do and look like all these things. And then no one cares. So that's a good starting point. At least you can remove some of the ego. And then the second part too is that you know, if I come to look at what it is, I get a bit of time by myself to do some of this stuff, but it allows me to think and reflect on the virtual calls that I have, the books that I read. And those things for me are a really good combination, because all of this types of stuff, as we look at and going into a market and going through each of these things, people really discount luck, timing, and the statistical significance of it, those things in your career, right? Because I can say certain tactics apply and work really well right now, but everyone's coming from a different starting point when they're taking information and they're going through some of these things. But when I'm looking at building an identity and trying to figure out from who my average of the five people are, I want to look at all the broad tactics that are applied in all of these books to all of the case studies and those people, and then implement that on my life so that when I come into doing, hey, I'm running this digital marketing campaign, is the timing, am I in the right spot, in the right space, mitigated enough so that I can be successful? And so being able to do that from here in Dunedin is I just miss out on some of the ego stuff of competing with others, which is great. And I think that's probably maybe why you're in Nelson, or certainly at least it's a nice lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then two, I get to build my identity through the books, people and thoughts that I receive from what I follow and what I look at.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. You've got the quietness, I guess, of a smaller city whilst also being able to connect with people all over the world for learning from. On that note of like a lot of it coming down to luck and timing, do you still think that anyone can become successful then, or like if they give it enough shots, or do you think
that's and I think everyone can become rich who has the capacity to learn, read, and anyone probably who's listening to this type of podcast, definitely. And the reason being is that it may take you longer if your timeline is long enough. Mine is that this has happened in 5 years and it looks really fantastic. But how were the market conditions? Well, we've been in bull market for however long now, right? We're about to probably go into a recession pretty soon. Do the same tactics apply? But there's a broad sweeping range of things that allow for you as a person to be good at this. And you look at these traits that are sort of universal, which is good entrepreneurs are hardworking. They typically have a margin of safety, or they've been in the business long enough that they've taken enough shots to be successful and they've recalibrated every time they've done it. The third thing that they usually have is that they're pretty good with strategic thinking. They have certain ways that they think about problems. And so when you get that base foundation right of, hey, these are the things that you have a crack at, which is I work hard, take enough shots at goal, and then have a good understanding of sort of how I want to apply this in a strategic iterative model, you can become successful. But it's just going to require a lot of that stuff that gets you at the right place at the right time too, because essentially you want to be able to do enough things that you can mitigate luck or at least reduce it to a point where it's still going to play a factor, but it's not as big of a factor as what you think and what it is. So, you know, all of those things lead and combine to what I think makes it a pretty incredible hard work journey to get you there. And some people will take longer than others, but ultimately watching just the highlight reel and one tactic of one person saying, oh, well, hey, I ran this type of a campaign with this exact media spend and this is the lifetime budget that we did, and here's the incredible results I've got. We just don't see everything that allowed that person to think about that creatively at that point. And so one of the things that we do, and as a society, we lionize people who have achieved really incredible results, but we don't have, you know, the 40-year-old who's on the front cover of Forbes doing $1 billion in business and grown this unicorn, as we don't look at what were the marketing conditions, what were the raising capital times of things, what was the actual risk they took. Because if you think about risk and luck as the exact same as the two sides of the same coin, you have that one where there's a good story and it's a great book called The Psychology of Money, where they talk about Bill Gates. He basically was a 1 in a million chance of having a computer at his high school that he got to program. And then there was another guy, literally same year as him, who was there, but had a mountaineering accident and passed away, same age as Bill Gates, but was better on the computer than him. And so there's a 1 in a million chance of that happening to him to there as well. And so you have to look at all of these things as, am I on a long enough timeline to mitigate risk and luck? And then you have to look at all those key opportunities of what were the tactics that could be broadly applied. So for me, you know, I do think success can be applied to anyone. You can do enough to mitigate it, but there's also a little bit of danger in looking and saying one person did this one thing and this is how they did it, because those are the headlines that get reported. But there's a huge, huge range of things where you don't understand how someone failed, how many times they fucked up, what went wrong for them to get to that point.
So more looking at, I guess, the principles as opposed to the specific tactics, because the principles often stay the same, whereas the tactics might change. The way to run this Facebook ad or what business is going to work it this year is going to change.
And that's it. It's a very big piece, because it's a thing that's the stuff we're publishing right now, but it's the reason I'm doing it on a weekly basis, is because something I might have published 2 years ago could be like a complete load of shit now. You know what I mean? So you just have to look at some of those things. And, you know, for me in my journey now, I see more of those broadly applicable things of similar to what we were discussing at the start. You know, you're a good communicator. You're thinking about how to build a brand. You're thinking about what it looks like for me to build an audience and that sort of thing. And then choosing and making those decisions, even what you did post high school or at high school, to set you up to choose to avoid going to uni, to make a career. You're thinking about those things, but they're sort of broad first principles, as opposed to any specific one tactic that you had, which was an Instagram hack that made this account go viral. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I feel like that's even more applicable probably in our worlds of growth hacking, like with what you're doing. Like a growth hack that might work now might in 6 months no longer be good. In other industries, you might have the same tactics that work for 10, 20 years. Like an accountant is probably using similar tactics for their clients for a long time.
Exactly.
Growth hacking, like 3 months time, something could change.
And that's it. So it's one of those things now. And I think, you know, for people who are starting out and having a crack, is have as many shots at goal. And then the only thing is, as long as you iterate and keep hanging around people that are smarter than you, you will eventually become successful, just purely by osmosis. Because around hanging around people that are smart and learning from them or hearing about how they think and talk, you become their average. And if your five friends are smarter and richer and doing more than you, you're eventually likely to come up to their level. But the inverse is also true. If you're five below you, if there's five people there that are doing less, you're also more likely to sink to their level.
What do you think the best way is for people listening that are trying to get in touch with five people that are above them, or just networking in general, with people doing more than them? Like, what do you think is the best way people can do that?
Yeah, so for me, the way I looked at networking, this is doing it a lot. First one is just automating it. So LinkedIn's an incredible networking tool for just reaching out. And so when I did that LinkedIn guide and the one that got the viral video, basically you just want to automate your outreach so that you get more shots at goal to try and talk to people that are smarter than you. So the first piece is just understanding that, like, reaching out to a busy person to ask them for advice is just a pretty shit offer. But the first piece of it, I look at this is, like, if I'm going after this, I'd use LinkedIn. It's a tool that's called WeConnect. You can get a free trial for 14 days, and you can also get a free premium version of LinkedIn for 30 days. I look at layering how my approach is. So if I'm an entrepreneur who's just coming to the market, and I'm literally trying to figure out, I want to pick up a client. Well, the first place to talk to is probably not go pitch the CEO. There's a fucking just no chance they're going to reply to you. But what is someone who has just got a marketing graduate role likely to respond to and looking to grow their network? The chances of them connecting with you are still pretty high. So first thing is just reaching out and saying, kia ora, first name, my name is blah. I'm trying to grow my network here on LinkedIn. Would love to connect. And if you do that with enough people at a low level, so like a marketing entry role, you can then run your next set of automation, which is to go to the marketing manager. And they say, oh, this person's connected already with X, Y, and Z. They've got lots of second connections and they wanting to grow their own network. Well, yeah, I could probably talk to them. And as you connect to a marketing manager, that's when you can then go through and say, hey, after you've got that connection and you do that with a whole range of people, you can then build your way up to the GM. And then once you've got enough GMs, you can connect with CEOs. And so that was for me when I did this, is like, that's a very tactical way to look at it. And it also got to automate it. So I end up having really great conversations with people way above my pay grade who would normally be like, fuck off. Ended up automating it so I could say and actually connect with them. So that's like that step by step. But also when you do it, it's just understanding that, you know, your offer of, can you grab 15 minutes of time? Most people will do it if you pitch it and say, hey, here's what I'm trying to do. Here's what I'd love to do. And if you could give me 15 minutes of your time, I'll either pay you for it or figure out a way to reimburse you. And that's sort of how you do it, is if you first one, make sure that you're not a stranger. So there's multiple connections and people can see that you're high trust enough that they want to connect with you. And then the second is when you ask and pitch people for their time, just understand these people are busy as shit, and that, you know, you'll take whatever you can to give them their time, and then just continue to reciprocate and give value back to them once you've connected. And so that's a very strategic, laid out, here's how to do it. And I've written about it on a guide. So for anybody who wants to have a look at that, I think, it's on Hakune. I can't remember, but I'll flick it over to a link after this.
Yeah, awesome. I'll link that below. So you're almost trying to, if you can bring someone else value, like, you're going to connect with them much better. Like, if you can find a way to benefit them or help them in some way, shape or form, it's always going to help. And same, I guess, as when I originally reached out to you, then you messaged Viv, who also runs the podcast, and asked about me by the sounds of it. And then the fact that I know her has helped me connect with you and get you on the podcast, and just building up those connections, I guess.
And it's like a high trust thing, because it's like, I'll get asked to do a podcast maybe once every 2 weeks. I get people emailing me now sort of once a week, asking for stuff. Can you help with this? Yeah. Could you do this? Because that sort of stuff. And like, I just don't have the time anymore to go back to as many of those people. But when I can see that there's a shared connection, and that's why you start low. A marketing grad straight out of uni is way more likely to connect with someone just because they want to build their network. But once you've got multiple marketing grads who are on your network, there's a good chance there's a marketing manager who's connected to those people, that then you can then connect and layer your connections up. And it's just a really good way to do it. And the fact that it just becomes, how do you know that person? Oh, X. Oh, okay, great. Yeah, okay, maybe I'll connect with them. Because as soon as you do a scope or a little bit of a dig of someone that you know around them and see what their background is, they get a trust recommendation, or even, nice, he's doing X, Y, and Z, then it makes it a really easy layup to then, for whatever you're asking, to go down that road.
Yeah, I guess you're no longer a stranger at that point.
Exactly.
Someone knows you. One, I guess also going along that route of social media and networking, one thing I heard you said that you don't really use social media on your phone, and you've used like newsfeed eradicators and so on with Facebook and YouTube and so on. And I try and do that for most, haven't quite done it for Instagram yet, but, how do you still stay sharp and on the leading edge of what's working and what's not working on these platforms if you're not personally using them? How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'm a really big believer. There's a great book by Cal Newport called Deep Work, where digital distraction is like a really huge piece.
Behind me or somewhere.
It's an incredible book, right? And the biggest thing, there's a whole range of stuff, but social media in itself is just like an attention trap. The reason I don't have any of those things on my phone is not because I'm a saint or I have any sort of like no technology policy. It's just I don't have any willpower not to look and use them. Like, they're just too addictive. And so if I can make the barrier to entry to use them really, really high, and then I'm less likely to waste time on them. And so when I look at using in some of this sort of stuff, is that the only reason I use these tools is as an action-based process. So if I'm trying to grow the newsletter, or if I'm looking at theirs, I run experiments with them. But also the other piece, now I'm at a stage, and I'm very fortunate to have staff where this is their day job, right? They live and breathe this stuff. And coming back to that, people who are the average of the five, and you get to have, you know, the highlight reel of what they're doing, their day-to-day, I get a lot of information from them now, what's working, what creative's not going. And so my data points come from other people because I can ask them, purely because I'm just fortunate enough to employ them. And then the second is I'm running a lot of the experimentation stuff still myself, like building the newsletter. Just me and Reese at the moment, and we've got one other content helper. At Rugby Breaks, we've got a marketing manager, and inside of K&J, well, it's like 23 of us now. So all of those people have access to some of those things. But ultimately, when I was doing this and growing it by myself, is I use them as action tools, and the implementation stuff becomes pretty much how I learn about it and what it is. But the other thing too, like the actual logistics of getting around it, like using Instagram and LinkedIn and some of those things, is scheduling, paying someone else. I use a VA to schedule my stuff so I don't spend too much time on there. I uninstall and reinstall the app. And I also have a third-party person who's got the app with my login in the Philippines, so that I can say, hey, can you put this on there? Purely just so I don't get stuck in that sinkhole, because if I went on this and I did it for here, I reinstalled it to upload my mate's book. He's just launched it. Anthony Sander, he's our media buyer at K&J. But I end up spending, fuck, I don't know, 15 minutes on memes. It's like, fuck, waste of time.
I'm the same. I don't have TikTok or Yeah, I do have Instagram, but don't have TikTok, Facebook, because, yeah, otherwise I will literally just spend hours on TikTok. It's ridiculous how smart, like, and it makes sense that they've got the smartest people in the world building these algorithms to try and keep you on there. So
exactly right.
And
that's it, those things there. And the reason TikTok's so successful, if you just even look at the UI between that and Instagram, the whole piece is that TikTok's just got a full screen. It's so visually fucking engaging. And it just scrolls and does literally, you have no work. You just have to look.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things, right, where you, if you pull attention, or if you fall and place your attention to it, then that bleeds into all of your other activities, but just eats up your time. And very similar to obviously what's pointed out in Cal Newport's book, is just that attention residue, that shit flows over into the next task that you're going to go doing. And there's the amount of times, like after this, like I just spent another, I watched 15 minutes memes. I then spent another 10 minutes sending memes to my friends. So that's what's going to happen.
And I think he talks about, like, even if you do have the willpower, like to try and resist it, like by not having to use the willpower, you can apply that to everything another else. Difficult problem. Like instead of spending, trying to resist social media and then you're trying to do something else, but you've got no energy left. Like now you just drop the social media and you've got all that attention, willpower, focus to put into whatever the other problem is for your business or so on.
And that's it. Yeah. Because I, you know, I've got three companies, they're all growing. And for me, the ability to, if I'm diffusing my attention across those, that's already hard enough, let alone any other sort of social obligations, which comes with any form of social media. The only reason I follow so few people is just because if I followed more, there's lots of interesting people out there. Just waste more time. So I just do it to protect my time because I just don't have that much. And I really care about sort of the energy and thoughts that I can have, because I should be reading books and getting back to more of those first principles times, as opposed to some raccoon meme that I sent before, which was fantastic, but just didn't help. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Didn't move the needle forward at all.
So,
interestingly, as of I think yesterday they made the announcement. And I made a video about it. Instagram's actually picking up that same thing as TikTok, where it takes up the whole screen. So, like Reels and so on is now like allowing the 9x16 format to take up the whole screen. So, Instagram's just going to get even more along the same lines.
Well, there you go. Right, and so that's the thing, and this is the benefit too. Like coming back to that point. I hung out with you and I got to learn that today. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had no idea about that, but you just picked up on that and shared that with me. And so by spending my time here more educated with you, I've got to pick it up from someone who's doing and living and breathing this stuff. And I'm like, oh, great, cool. Actually, we now need to focus a lot more for Rugby Bricks as much as we do on TikTok, our Reels. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's Reels 100%.
Yeah.
It seems like that's a lot of what you're almost doing nowadays, is you're leveraging other people spending a lot of time on something. Like someone might be working for you running TikTok and they might spend 8 hours creating and posting content, and then you might have a 10-minute conversation with them and you can pick up all their insights in 10 minutes as opposed to 8 hours, 9 hours of doing it yourself.
Exactly. And it's like my stuff is now like, okay, cool. I'm flying. So I fly to LA next on Wednesday, and then I'm off to Jakarta on like 5 days after being there. And my deal, the things that I'm going to do is like, I'm working one with a relatively large company in Indonesia, but my goal for that is to learn about what the Indonesian government wants to export, as opposed to probably what's the best 8 hours of TikTok content. You know what I mean? I have to relatively choose my priorities differently based on what I'm learning and what I'm hearing about. So for me, I would love to still do that stuff because that's the tinkering part. But now that, you know, the position I am within the company, revenue goals, growing, selling our company, all of that stuff lands with me. And so they're just a different set of responsibilities compared to when I was just creating and then running campaigns themselves.
Yeah. Interesting. And moving a little bit along to Digital Boost, which is another project you've worked a lot on, which many of the listeners may not have heard of, but New Zealand ones may have, is helping, I guess, educate and upskill New Zealand business owners on digital literacy.
Yep.
What did you find were like the biggest improvements that businesses saw? Like what were the sort of 2 to 3 things that you may have taught there that businesses got the biggest return on for like their online presence? If that's something you looked at.
100%. So, and for the context, this is an initiative and program that's run by the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment. The primary education delivery is called the MindLab. And for anyone who ever wants to check out a really incredible founder, her name is Frances Valentine. She's one of the smartest people I know and certainly a mentor of mine, virtually and sort of physically by having the time I spent with her. But the stuff that they were able to do and we looked at here is there was two parts to it. One was just how do we get people to sign up to this? And then two, the rural stuff, which was really, really interesting for me. So growing up in Alexandria, how many people know, like, what does it mean to find something searchable on Google? Like a lot of the people, the first insight was, how do I actually turn or buy a Google pay-per-click ad? So when people, someone searches for a thing that is relevant to my business, that they find me. And so
yeah,
that was the first one. Most people had no idea that how the Google rankings worked, what the SERPs meant and how to actually be on there versus being able to someone like buying the word Alexandra Pharmacy. When I was back in Alex from presenting this rural workshop to people, mind blowing to the pharmacy owner. She was like, so I can put that and have my website at the top of Google for a pay-per-click ad. It's like, yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
And so like, you know what I mean? Showing them the search volume for that, you know, there was 1700 people searching for that in just Alexandra and Central Otago. And so for them to see that first one is like, okay, cool. That's the piece where people have a look at it and they go through and they actually find that how Google works, which is a huge ubiquitous thing that everybody in the world knows how to use. But Kiwis and for a lot of the small business owners just had no idea how to even what that influence and what that meant. The second was understanding that when you push boost on a Facebook post for like paid spend, that's going to go to people that it's just going to reach 52,000 people if you spend $100 or whatever. It's definitely not that cheap. But whatever CPMs, like they just had no idea. They're like, oh, well, this many people saw it. I'm like, well, yeah, but fuck it. Did it matter? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did those people even care about it? And so that was a really big thing is that people just didn't have an understanding of that. And then the other piece was just in New Zealand and for Kiwis, we do really rely heavily on word of mouth and trust. And so how do you actually establish that in a digital presence? One of the things that we were doing and used is just how to use Facebook groups, how to promote yourself and Choice, if you've seen what they are. They're one of like a really large New Zealand Facebook marketplace. But like how to actually write a post that shows what your business does and promote it in Facebook groups. And so out of those three things, those are learnings. But the amount of people that turned up and showed us the stuff, like showing them, you know, what a search result was and how to rank for those was really just pretty mind-blowing. And it just shows a little bit behind us in terms of we're quite far behind the eight ball. And New Zealand's productivity, there's a thing called the OECD, which gives out economic reports of how productive we are. We're just doing a really shitty job. We're working more hours and we're less efficient. And it's one probably due to our lack of digital literacy as Kiwis is that we just are used to being a rural export and our whole export is not digital. So
yeah,
everything that we're trying to learn here is we've got a generation of people who are just terrified to touch this stuff too. Not sure how to touch a website, not sure how to edit a landing page, not sure how to even change or create like a bespoke domain. The fact that when people realize they have a small business, but they could change from @gmail or @extra.co.nz
yeah,
was like really another mind-blowing piece. So for us, it's been a hell of an education, but we're now at 46,000 people have signed up to it. And it's, you know, the goal is to hopefully get, you know, 60,000 Kiwi small business owners who are actually using this and starting to export it to the world and pick up that digital literacy. So
that's awesome. Because when you're hitting 46,000 people, that's, what, 1% of the population. So that's probably a large percentage of actual business owners.
Yeah, that's so
that are using the platform and benefiting. And yeah, like I can imagine those small changes ranking on Google, for example, is going to make a massive difference to those local businesses.
And that's it, bro. Like it's the other thing too, but also being able to do e-commerce and knowing that you could probably sell your mates in Aussie, or getting someone to be able to have and go through some of those things. And so, you know, for me, this has probably been like out of the work that I've done, like working with TikTok and meeting their head of growth and some of those things, amazing experiences. But in terms of the impact that this one's made and the stuff that I've got to work on, like helping us as Kiwis become more digitally literate, by far the most impactful thing I've done. So it's a hell of a privilege to do it and still stoked to be involved to be able to deliver this.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and I will also link that below as well if people want to check that out. Is that available for people outside of New Zealand as well? Or is that just...
Yeah, anyone can sign up for it. I mean, probably, I don't know, they're probably frowning upon it, but it's pretty good. The content, if you're like us digitally, there's not much on there. Yep. There's a couple of videos that I've got that might be a little bit more advanced. There's some stuff around crypto and blockchain stuff, but still very basic. But for anyone who is new to anything digital, it's a very, very good resource. But I can't imagine much of your audience has not heard much of this before. So,
yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's something a lot of us take for granted. Like, I feel a lot of younger people, or even people that aren't necessarily running a business, still realize that, you know, you can sell to your mates in Aussie, you could start a website. Even if they're not running a business, they realize it's not too difficult. But 100%. A lot of the older people who might have run a business for a long time don't realize that. Like,
yeah, that's it.
So I guess to wrap things up, what would be like the 2 to 3 best piece of advice you'd give to a young person today looking to get into business, entrepreneurship, build a life they enjoy? Yeah.
So I think I'll go through this one and it may be a little bit long-winded answer, but the first one too is
go for it.
Luck and timing are still a big part of what most of us have played, and you need to be able to understand basic principles of people who are doing things in the world, and the first basic building blocks of that, which is hard work, you know, strategically thinking, taking lots of shots and goal. And everyone that I know who has done a lot of great things are all action orientated. And the reason I say this is that for most people here is that you want to go through sort of 3 modes. Is that if you look at this, people are listening to this audibly, and then they go through, but reading is faster than listening. And then the one step from there is that doing is faster than reading, right? And the fact that you get quicker feedback on iterative pieces. And so when you think of that as just being action oriented, most people will not do things out of fear or hesitancy or fear of what people around them think. So the first piece in there and actually doing it is there, be very action oriented, understand. And the second point of that is that your timeline will be completely different to someone else's. You're just going to be running on different horizons, and that's okay. And then the third piece, and we do this inside of K&J, is that probably 80% of our team have some form of side hustle or business. We encourage people to start their own businesses as well alongside us, because I don't think a job is the right place for people to go, in the way that I wouldn't encourage someone. Like, we've got employees and we're very fortunate to have them, but I don't think that's the best way to live your life, because you're not in charge of the freedom of time. Money, in its way that it is, like, its biggest utility is to give you the freedom of time to make good decisions. So lots of people think it's a nice car, house, that sort of shit. It's really not. It's the ability to wake up on one day and pick and choose what you want to do with your time. And so, you know, when you're an employee, you don't have that ability. But if you've got a bad boss and you have a lot of savings in your bank account, then money gives you the ability to pick and choose how you spend your time. And so for me, I think some of that other pieces around this is that, you know, pursue wealth in the way that you go through this. But, you know, the entrepreneurship of having a crack and doing it and not caring what people think, that's the best path to go down and have a go with this stuff. So I think there's probably sort of 3 bullet points there that sort of get around to it.
That's awesome advice. Both of those, or all of those, remind me a lot of Naval Ravikant. I think he says almost word for word that reading.
It's pulled right from, I think. I can't remember which one it is. I don't know if it's the Tweet Storm or I've got his book, The Almanac. And I don't know which one I've pulled it from, but it's all of those things there. They're so very, very true. And, you know, the way that all those things there being action oriented is just, you just get more data points to be successful upon, because then you can learn, have a crack, learn some more, have another crack, and eventually you'll find the pathway that will get you there. But you're just going to fail a lot along the way at the start, but that's okay.
Yeah. And totally agree with the money buys freedom as well. I mean, yeah, I definitely do not have a fancy car or any of that, but being able to choose how you spend your time, what you do, is much better as well.
Yeah. And that's, I think for all of us, that's what we all want. Most of us, like, when we do this, and this is a great one from the psychology of money, when we see a person driving a really expensive car, the only data points that we ever get is that they've now, one, spent $100,000 on that car. How they finance that, we don't know. So that's the first piece. Yeah. The other part too is that that person thinks that they look really cool when they're driving that car, and they're not thinking about the person inside it. They would be thinking, us as the individual, I'd look really cool if I was driving that car. So the utility of expensive things is basically on expending money inside your own head. in terms of how you think others perceive. But the part that you actually really care about is that you don't have to work long, shitty hour days or things that you want to do for a crappy boss. And money buys you the ability to make and pick and decide on those timelines that you want, as opposed to, I got to turn up, have my paycheck and live day to day. That's why we should have really high savings rates. But the freedom of entrepreneurship and the money that that buys you that time is just significantly more important.
Yeah, I think I saw it's a quote on Instagram the other day, something to do with, it was maybe, I think I've seen the same one with a Rolex as well as a car. And it's like, a Rolex isn't a flex if it tells you when to show up to your shit boss or something like that. Or, yeah, the same could be applied to a car. Like, you know, it doesn't matter how fancy your car is if it's driving to a place you hate to be for 10 hours a day.
Exactly, bro. And that's it. Most of us are thinking about how cool we'd look if we were driving that. No one really cares about the driver, which they think we're purchasing other people's respect. No one's really thinking about that shit. They're just thinking how cool I would be if I was that person.
Yeah, I've never actually thought of it like that, but that actually, now that you say that, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, another thing. All of my thoughts and stuff, as much as here and everyone says, like, I've been able to deliver it and I've put it into a cohesive manner, all of my stuff stolen from just people smarter than me. So I've used it and I've been able to apply their thoughts and their first principles thinking to get me to where I am.
Seems to be a common theme, I think, and allows you to speed things up, I guess, because you're taking the best bits of either an employee that's spending all day on a topic or a, you know, successful person that's written a book.
Yeah, through 80-20.
Yeah, awesome, man. So this has been a really good interview, and I've gained a ton. Personally, learned a lot, and I'm sure a lot of people listening would have gained a heap from this. Where can people find out more about you, your businesses, your content, and get additional stuff from you?
Yeah, so look, for anyone who wants to sort of get a hold of me, I'm usually not that responsive via email. I will, if someone does email me, they can come back. I will come back to them. So that's just kale@kpanoho.com. So kale@kpanoho.com. If you want to get a hold of me, I'll give you a hand there. In terms of thoughts, like I said, we're building the blog. So go to hakune.co/newsletter. And again, I'll flick you those links over there. Those are sort of the best ways to get hold of me. And then the socials @kalepanoho. You can find me pretty much anywhere on most of those things. And sometimes I share insightful stuff when I do go to use social media, or I'll get someone else to post for me. But that's the best sort of way to get a hold of me if you need me.
Awesome. I'll link that below. And if people are reaching out, make sure, hopefully, they listen to the part on networking and come in with some sort of value for you.
Yeah. If there's something you can Google first, please do so. But if you've got a question that you think maybe that can probably help you with and you've done a bit of due diligence, it certainly makes it easier for me to reply.
Awesome, man. Yeah, that'll all be linked below for those listening. And awesome. Again, really appreciate your time.
Yeah, privileged to be here, bro. Thank you very much.